Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Detroit turns off the water. Amazon buys Twitch. And what life is like in Liberia as Ebola spreads. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Washington, I'm David Gura, in for Kai Rizdahl. He's out reporting for our American Futures series. It's Tuesday, the 26th of August, and it's great to have you with us. We start the show with durable goods, things like washing machines and refrigerators, but also cars and aircraft carriers. The Commerce Department came out with some new data on durable goods for the month of July, and they looked pretty good. When people and businesses fork over money to buy these things, that is usually a good sign. But before you get too excited, well, here's Marketplace's Sabri Benishour.
It takes a lot to get economists hot and bothered, but if you ask them about the durable goods increase, they will say it was
a sharp increase. It was stunning.
Massive.
And then they will say the numbers
look modest, don't have much bearing.
Pretty much irrelevant.
So what is going on? Those gentlemen, by the way, were Gary Thayer with Wells Fargo Advisors, Ben Herzon with Macroeconomic Advisors, and Lou Crandall with Rights and ICAP. They say, first of all, most of that surge in durable goods is due to one company, Boeing. It got a bunch of new orders for expensive airplanes, which is great for the long term, but
a lot of that won't translate into immediate production increase, so you really need to sort of factor that out.
Gary Thayer with Wells Fargo Advisors. So forget airplanes, forget washing machines even. What we should be looking at is something called capital goods. That's the equipment that businesses buy in order to make things businesses will sell. Ben Herzon with Macroeconomic Advisors.
To put equipment in place, businesses have to be confident that they can sell the stuff that equipment is going to produce.
And those numbers are up 11% over last year, with some revisions that make June look really good, too. It means businesses are more confident. Consumers seem to be, too. Lou Crandall with Rights and ICAP.
There's been a sea change in the way people respond to the questions about whether jobs are plentiful or hard to get.
In 4 months, the number of people who think jobs are easy to get jumped from 13% to 18%, more than that number rose in the past 2 years combined.
I don't think it's a sign that the economy is about to start booming. However, it is reassuring that we may have some momentum going into next year.
A lot of businesses and consumers seem to think so, too. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
More of us are paying our bills on time. A new report says credit card delinquencies are at a 7-year low. We want to pay down debt. We also want to avoid late fees and other penalties. What's this mean for banks' bottom lines? Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports.
If you skip a credit card payment, just don't pay your bill for a month, you're considered delinquent. Today, TransUnion reported the 90-day delinquency rate has fallen by half since 2007. Anthony Guittard is director of research and consulting at TransUnion. He says credit card delinquencies are trending steadily downward.
They're even considerably lower than they were before the recession ever hit. So it's been quite an improvement.
Of course, banks ding us with late fees if we're delinquent. So if more of us are paying on time, is that bad news for them because they can't collect those fees? Not according to Kurt Long. He's chief economist at the National Association of Federal Credit Unions.
We think this is a positive trend for credit unions.
Long says banks and credit unions still make money if we carry a balance on our credit cards. Even if we don't, they get a swipe fee every time we charge something. Long says delinquencies can turn into charge-offs, loans that are never paid back.
Thankfully, we've seen charge-offs decline as well. Fewer of those loans are going bad.
The fall in delinquencies is even leading banks to give credit cards to people with lower credit scores. Lawrence J. White teaches economics at the NYU Stern School of Business. He says it makes sense for banks to loosen up credit right now for the less-than-perfect consumer.
Because the economy is better, he or she is more likely to stay employed and be in a position where he or she can repay.
And White says consumers have learned not to live beyond their means. They don't want to slide back to where they were during the Great Recession and are using credit more wisely. I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, consumer confidence turned into some market confidence. We'll have details when we do the numbers.
We'll be right back.
Amazon just made a big purchase. It paid about $1 billion for a company called Twitch, a company that lets you watch other people playing video games. Twitch, it seems, has a pretty good business model and a pretty committed audience, big enough that Google was trying to buy it for a while. It gets its content for free, and then it sells ads to what's estimated to be millions of people watching every month. Marketplace tech host Ben Johnson is here to help us make sense of this. Hey, Ben.
Hey, David.
So when I heard about this service, my mind wandered back to the dullest days of my college career, just sitting around, often with a beer, a slice of pizza, watching friends playing video games. I mean, this is like the most passive pursuit, isn't it?
Well, listen, a beer and a slice of pizza don't sound so bad, David. But
always.
So Twitch is this website, or I guess some would call it a platform, that streams video game content and live gameplay to about 55 million people every month. It lets gamers stream. Yeah, it is a lot. It lets gamers stream their own live gameplay so that other gamers and gaming enthusiasts can watch.
Is this something that you, Ben Johnson, do? Are you a Twitcher? Is that the right term?
I'm not a Twitcher, but I'm a lurker.
Okay.
I don't play the games that are popular on the site, like Defense of the Ancients 2, for instance. But I have watched some of the things that have gone beyond their user base and hit the mainstream. So, like, the website has this thing called Twitch Plays Pokemon, where tons of players control a Pokemon game all at once by typing commands for a character into, like, the website's live chatting tool. Which is a strange and insane process to watch. Also, weirdly, there's this other live Pokemon stream where people set up controls that overlay this goldfish tank. And depending on where a goldfish swims in the tank, the Pokemon character on the screen will move or hit a button.
I am doing my best to picture this, Ben, and you have to forgive me. This is a thing. This is a thing that a company, a big established company like Amazon, wants.
I know. But, David, let's do the numbers, man.
Okay, fair enough. I'll let you do them.
Twitch has had 43% of the live video streaming traffic by volume in a given week. So that's above, you know, ESPN's websites, MLB.com, CNN. It's also been reported that last year the number of people watching one of these live championships for this game called League of Legends was 32 million watching live. Now, that's more than the audience for the finales of Breaking Bad, 24, and The Sopranos combined. Twitch has incredible engagement among users. Users reportedly spend close to an average of 2 hours on the website every day. Now, the browser window might just be open and I could be in the shower or making cookies as I'm wont to do. But 2 hours a day, that's a lot of time, man. Amazon wants a piece of that.
A lot of time. I got to imagine that time translates to advertising revenue.
Absolutely. Or so Amazon hopes, right? That's how a lot of tech companies make revenue, and Amazon is certainly one of them, right? But what's really interesting here is that while Twitch's audience is huge, it's also like really specific, which means that right now, for instance, advertisements that are about other kinds of gaming maybe are more effective because users feel like the ads actually relate to them. And that kind of targeted advertising, that's like the big holy grail for all big tech companies, right?
How much is this going to change now that Amazon's in control?
Now, that's the big question, right? And whenever we see an acquisition like this, this is, you know, part of what users are worried about, whether they're going to stop loving the service because, you know, the big bad company that owns them now is going to mess it up. The other question here is whether Amazon might be able to leverage this new excitement around gaming that it can now own by owning Twitch to get people to actually buy its hardware devices.
All right. Ben Johnson, the host of Marketplace Tech. Thank you, Ben.
All right. Thanks, David.
If you want more from Ben on gaming, check out Marketplace Tech's series called Mind Games. That's all at marketplace.org under tech. The city of Detroit is once again shutting off the water to homes of Detroiters who are behind on their bills. About 15,000 customers had their water service shut off this year between April and June, and the city declared a month-long moratorium on those shutoffs to give its customers a chance to pay up or get on new payment plans. As Michigan Radio's Kate Wells reports, Detroiters have been scrambling to sign up for those plans.
So I'm standing here at the Cobo Center at the Water Fair. This line, it's huge. I've been walking for about, 30, 40 seconds. I'm maybe halfway to the front. There's a bunch of kids who've kind of sprawled out on the floor. It's a long wait. And people say that they're here because they're hoping that they can get some kind of assistance. How long have you guys been here in total? When did you get here?
Probably since about 10 o'clock, so now it's almost 3.
Yes, our journey is over almost.
Luna Simpson has been waiting here with her two grandsons who live with her, Josh and CJ. They are both wearing matching red Iron Man t-shirts, and she says she needs a payment plan for her water bill so that she can use the rest of her money to do other things like buy gas, school clothes for the boys, maybe even pay for Josh to play basketball. That concept makes CJ very envious.
I wish I can go to basketball.
Do you think you will when you're older?
Yes. I'm only 4 years old and he's only 6 years old.
And now their long wait is finally about to pay off. Their number is finally called up and they're sent to one of the dozens of tables where water department reps are helping people work out payment plans.
And just showing a balance of $399.74. You would be able to go into a payment arrangement for $39.97. Do you want to go into a payment arrangement today?
Yes.
That is a 10% down payment on what she owes, which is what the water department is now requiring you to pay up front within the next 2 weeks before you can get on a payment plan. Of course, once you are on a payment plan, your water will not be shut off, so long as you stay current on your bills. And you're given 24 months to pay off everything else that you owe, on top, of course, of your monthly bill. If this sounds a lot more flexible than what the department used to offer, that's because it is. And it's no coincidence. With all of the protests and UN criticism about the city turning off people's water, city officials are bending over backwards to assure residents that they are on their side. But what if you cannot get your hands on that 10% payment in the next couple of weeks? That's the case for Vivian Logan. She came here with her friend Judy Bogart because Logan owes $3,000 on her water bill, she says. And she says she doesn't have the $300 she needs to get on a payment plan.
That's the problem. I'm not going to be able to get it in 14 days. And then if I did get it in 14 days, I'm not going to be able to pay $300 or possibly a month on top of my other bills after that.
People like Logan are supposed to be able to get financial assistance if they cannot pay their bills. But to get that help, they still have to make that 10% payment up front.
So what do you do now? Where do you go?
You tell me. Tell me who I could refer to so I could get some help.
So I went and asked that question of Alexis Wiley. She's the chief of staff of the mayor's office.
What we found is that people have been able to find that assistance. They've been able to go to their church. They've been able to go to their family members.
Meanwhile, Luna Simpson, the grandmother of the two little boys, looks enormously relieved when she makes that first down payment. She tells the boys what they can afford now that they don't have to worry about losing their water, gas, clothes, maybe even some basketball. In Detroit, I'm Kate Wells for Marketplace.
Coming up, forget about the guy who used Kickstarter to make a potato salad. Here's someone who used crowdsourcing to pay for college.
I needed the extra money to go buy materials for school, like school supplies, bed sheets, laptop.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 29 points, almost 0.2%, to close at 17,106. The NASDAQ advanced 13 points, 0.3%, to end the day at 4570. And the S&P 500 was up 2 points, about 0.1%, to finish at 2,000, a record close. Best Buy turned down 6.75%. The electronics retailer announced worse-than-expected second-quarter revenue and forecast a drop in same-store sales later this year. But discount shoe retailer DSW stepped up 9.25% as its adjusted quarterly earnings beat expectations. And on that Twitch news that Ben and I were talking about just a couple minutes ago, online retailer Amazon was up 2 1/3%. In Europe, Britain's FTSE climbed 0.7%. France's CAC 40 advanced 1 2/10%. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note edged up 2.39. And you are listening to Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at what's coming up Wednesday. The Congressional Budget Office is set to revise economic projections for the next 10 years. In 1859, the first successful oil well was drilled in Pennsylvania. And may I suggest some dessert? How about banana bread, banana cream pie, or banana pudding? Oh, you know, just in honor of Banana Lovers Day. I'm Daisy Palacios.
This is Marketplace. I'm David Gura, in for Kai Rizdahl. To cut costs, Time Warner has reportedly made a buyout offer to employees over the age of 55 who have been with the company for a decade or more at its Turner division. These are mostly people who work at CNN, TNT, and TBS. Offering buyouts in advance of other cuts is fairly common. So how do older workers, still several years away from when they plan to retire, evaluate those offers? Marketplace's Dan Weissman has been asking around.
Here's the first and most important question.
What is the probability of their asking you to leave one way or the other?
That's Robin Pinkley, a business professor at Southern Methodist University. Time Warner has already told employees other cuts will follow the buyouts, which will not be generous enough to retire on, just better than the severance that comes with getting laid off. So if you've got any worries about getting laid off, you might want to take the buyout to fund your job search, which Pinkley says will be no picnic if you're part of a mass exodus.
It's not just you who's entering the marketplace at this time. There are a bunch of yous.
People with your same resume who took the same buyout you did. Your company's probably targeting well-paid
older workers. This is Marketplace. I'm David Gura.
They hope
for
cheaper
Kai 28-year-olds
will
to make cut costs, Time Warner also has reportedly made a buyout offer to employees over the age of 55
age
who've been with the company
exists.
For a decade
That's
or
John
more
Challenger,
at its
CEO
Turner
of the
division.
Firm,
those are mostly
Challenger,
people
Gray
who work at CNN, TNT, and TBS.
Offering
buyouts in advance of other cuts is fairly common.
Another outside
how do older workers still several years away from when they plan to retire evaluate these offers? Marketplace's Dan Weissman asking around.
The chances of walking into a similar job with comparable pay without having to move is low. But companies do need people.
They're looking at alternatives to hiring on just full-time labor. If you're open to an alternative arrangement with an employer, there's an enormous talent shortage.
So if hustling for short-term contracts sounds like a fun way to spend the next few years, that could be an option. And if that sounds grim, just be thankful it's not 2009. In Chicago, I'm Dan Weissman for Marketplace.
Since March, the Ebola virus has claimed more than 1,400 lives, and the country that's been hit the hardest is Liberia. There's a curfew, schools are closed and have been converted into holding centers for people suspected of having the disease. Many markets are closed, and the government has quarantined whole neighborhoods, including one called West Point, a township in Monrovia. We've called Jonathan Pelele, who reports from Monrovia, for our partner, the BBC. Thanks for joining us.
Hello.
I don't know if you've visited West Point, but can you give me a sense of what daily life is like under that quarantine?
Life has remained unchanged for people in this township for decades. There are no public toilets. They don't have sanitation materials. I mean, it's extremely congested, and people just don't like to go there because it is very much chaotic and very unsafe. And following the imposition of this restriction, people are stuck there. Even those who had just gone there to spend time with relatives are all stopped from leaving. So that has even made life more difficult in West Point.
What does this outbreak mean for people who are sick, but maybe not sick with Ebola? In other words, are people who have other illnesses seeking medical attention?
It is keeping them at home, unfortunately, because anybody developing high fever should be presumed Ebola positive until the contrary is proven, as opposed to saying that if you have fever, come to the hospital, Maybe it is not Ebola. Maybe it is malaria. Maybe it is typhoid. As a result of that, and knowing that eventually, if they are tested positive of Ebola, they will be taken into isolation and will be separated from their families. Many people who are suffering from other illnesses just remain home to die. There are people dying of other illnesses outside of Ebola.
Before I let you go, how long have you lived in Monrovia, and how has this outbreak affected the way that you lead your life?
Well, I've lived in Monrovia for a very long time. I've worked for the BBC for 20 years now. But the outbreak of Ebola has kind of changed our way of life here, because our culture, our tradition of even meeting people, greeting people, has now been stopped because of Ebola. We are now skeptical to get around friends, to get around other relatives, because you don't know who has gone in contact with whom. It's kind of made things a bit difficult. So it's a matter of trying to be careful, but at the same time knowing the obligation that you have to serve the greater society.
Jonathan Pelele is the BBC's correspondent in Monrovia, Liberia. Jonathan, thank you very much.
It was my pleasure.
Millions of students are heading back to college, and a lot of them are worried about more than grades. They're worried about paying their bills. And so, more students are counting on the generosity of strangers to pay their tuition. As part of our Learning Curve coverage of education and technology, Marketplace's Annie Baxter has this report.
Next week, Selena Vang will be a freshman at the University of Minnesota Duluth. Most of her expenses will be covered by loans and scholarships. For the rest, she launched a campaign on the website GoFundMe.
I needed the extra money to go buy materials for school, like school supplies, bed sheets, laptop.
Initially, Vang figured she'd get small contributions from friends and relatives and raise a few hundred dollars. But then she boosted her goal to $3,000 so she'd have more of a financial cushion. She's two-thirds of the way there. Standing on the steps of her old high school in Minneapolis, Vang says her parents are immigrants from Laos. They don't make much money selling vegetables and have 10 children to support. But they don't like the idea of their daughter asking for handouts.
My parents grew up in a culture where it's embarrassing to do that. But then, like, I think I have tried to tell my parents that in this generation, if you need help, you need to ask and you need to put yourself out there in order to get help.
More than 150,000 students have tried raising money on GoFundMe, up from a couple hundred students just 4 years ago. Other sites, like GreenNote and Gift of College, focus exclusively on raising money for educational expenses. The sites charge a fee or take a cut of the donations. GoFundMe takes 5%. Students are turning to these sites at a time when tuition and student loan debt levels are on the rise. But crowdfunding expert Ruth Hedges says many efforts fail.
There's this misconception that if you build it, they will come. And the truth of the matter is that it's much more complicated than that.
For instance, Hedges says you should launch a campaign with a few donors lined up in advance so that a quarter of the goal is met in the first week. That kind of success breeds success. Hedges says kids entering college are actually well poised to raise money through social networks because they have a lot of them. Think school orchestras or sports teams.
They actually have more groups of crowds in their life than they may have later on in life when they get older. And, you know, they're not involved in so many activities. And that's the time to compel those groups to support you.
There are some risks to raising money for college this way, though. Scott Weingold is managing director of College Planning Network. He says successful campaigns could jeopardize financial aid.
It appears as if some schools may treat that as outside funds and simply diminish the amount of aid that the family would have otherwise been eligible for.
In that case, the crowdfunding campaign might do more to help the college lower its costs than it would the student. In Minneapolis, I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
And if you want to crowdfund your own education, we've got some tips on how to do it right, or at least how not to get it completely wrong. You can find those at marketplace.org/learningcurve.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note about legroom on airplanes, or the lack thereof. There's a device called a knee defender. I didn't know about this until today, by the way. It's a device that prevents the person in the seat in front of you from reclining. The knee defender is, I should say, something that the FAA has banned. Otherwise, my 6-foot-1 self would be halfway through ordering one right now. Anyway, a passenger used one of these on a flight from Newark to Denver. That started a fight, which ended when one passenger threw water on the other, and the plane was diverted to Chicago. The kicker? Both of them were seated in United's Economy Plus section, which means they had up to 5 inches of additional legroom, something the airline considers spacious. I got that right off their website. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow gained 29 points, almost 0.2%. The NASDAQ advanced 13 points, 0.3%. And the S&P 500 was up 2 points, about 0.1%. Our special projects team is Nancy Fargali and Millie Jefferson. Lindsay Thomas and Caitlin Esch are on the Wealth and Poverty Desk. Our digital producers are Ariana Tobin, Shay Huffman, and Tony Wagner. I'm David Gura. Kai will be back here tomorrow. This is APM.